Welcome to the latest in the Games Gone podcast with me, Tom Ross. My guest tonight, delighted to welcome young Darren Carter, our youngest ever guest so far. Carter, good to speak to you. How's things at Solihull? Good?
Yeah, very well, Tom. Thank you for the call up. I've been waiting in the wings for a while now. My phone hasn't been going, so I thought you forgot about me. But no, I'm all good. Yeah, things are good at the Moors, and season coming to a close. A season like no other, as you can expect. But
absolutely,
it's been a challenge.
Let's just start as a youth. I mean, you're a Solihull lad. You're at Solihull Moors, yeah. But you're a Solihull lad, and you played for a junior team when you were spotted, I suppose. Who was that junior team?
Arden Forest, in the Central Warwickshire Boys League. And sort of when I got to 7 or 8, my dad was on the scout about for a team for me to play for. And Arden Forest was very local. I went to Langley School as a kid, and they played the games around the corner at Linden School. So, it was right on my doorstep. And I played for them from when I was eight or nine to when I left to become a schoolboy with Blues at 14.
And presumably then, I mean, it was quite a successful and still running, of course, Arden Colster, a very successful young side. And I often remember presenting you with an award when you were 9, not realising as I handed it to you that 9 years later you'd be scoring a very important goal.
That's right, Tom. I've got the photo somewhere. It's actually in a frame, would you believe? So
that's your mum and dad, not you.
I was going to say, when I have visitors, I make sure it's hidden away. I don't want to scare them too much, Tom. But no, it was, like I say, memories. And obviously back then when you were a kid and you had yourself, and I think we had Dave Barnett 1 year and Claridge. So, to have anybody from the game to come down and present you with a trophy. And again, Tom, I'd never expect that, years later I'd be standing on the pitch at Cardiff chatting to you about getting promoted to the Premier League. So
and missing the team photo.
But I'll never let you leave that one down, mate. That's for sure.
We'll come to that wonderful goal in a minute. But just did other people that you were playing, because that was a very, very good league, the Warwickshire, Central Warwickshire, wasn't it?
Central Warwickshire, yep.
That was did other players from other clubs make it?
I think around my age, not to my knowledge of the sort of local teams around. There was a few lads that followed me to Blues as a schoolboy, and then a couple who actually got scored, but sort of didn't go any further than that. So but it's always, I think over the years, you can see, people like Craig Gardner and Jack Grealish, people like that have come through and played, local sides. And it's obviously got a huge success rate in terms of lads coming through. But at that time, I was the one that got through and managed to break into the first team, from my age group and from my team anyway, Arden Forest.
How big an influence was your dad?
Huge. And, me and my dad, even now, I'll phone him up and, we're on the phone for at least an hour every time talking football and anything that, concerns or worries I've had, he's the first person I phone. And growing up, I followed him. He was sort of on the non-league scene, and followed him, everywhere, and watched all his games, and inherited my left peg from him. That he still claims he's better than mine to this day. And he gave me the learning that I needed within the game. Obviously, he's a massive blue nose. Brought me up the same way. He's from Smallleith, and all our family are blue noses. So it was sort of going down the Blues on a Saturday, or obviously when he was playing, go to his games, and then Sunday he'd take me to football as well, as long with with my mum as well. So my dad, as I say, is the first port of call, anything football related.
Just football bad family by the sound of it.
That's it. Literally are. There's my dad's, one of seven. They're all blue noses, barring my one auntie's married a Villa fan. So you can imagine how that goes down at family gets together. So there's two Villa fans against about 50 other Blues fans. It was born and bred in me that obviously I was always going to be a blue nose, and that was my grounding, really. And so, as I say, I knew nothing other than Blues up until I left the club at 21.
I'm sure you always wanted to be a footballer, but a professional footballer. When was the realization that I've got a chance here?
I was always, you know, decent coming up, obviously through school, and I played for my district, which is Solihull. I then played for the county, West Midlands, and even from sort of when I was, you know, 9 and 10, Blues would come and watch my games for Arden Forest, West Brom, Wolves, Villa, and actually sort of before I hit 14. Obviously, you remember Tom Barry Fry, you know, the club scrapped the youth system, didn't they? Yes. Blue. And sort of from 13 to, you know, before I turned 14, I actually trained at Wolves for nearly a year. And it got to the point where, as I turned 14, I was ready to sign schoolboy forms. Fate would have it, Blues set up the youth and the youth team as it was back then. And literally asked me straight away, would I sign schoolboy forms? And that time I was always going to say yes. And I think it was a couple of weeks later, Wolves contacted me and asked me to sign schoolboy forms for them. And I said, you're literally 2 weeks too late. I've signed for Blues now. And it was always, you know, how it worked out. Sort of then when I signed schoolboy forms with Blues, that's when I really thought, all right, I've got a real chance here. I've got 2 years before I leave school. Training a couple of nights a week and playing on a Sunday for the academy. That's when I sort of thought there's a real pathway for me, there's a real chance.
Was it past the days of cleaning boots and stuff? You'd never had to do that, presumably.
You know what? I was pretty lucky in terms of when I become an apprentice at 16, there was still a little bit of that. You still had, you know, your first team players who you clean boots for. It was mainly really the academy staff back at that point when I reached it. And, you know, there was no cleaning the showers and toilets like back in the old days. I kind of just about missed that, which was, I was probably quite fortunate. But, I'd still clean boots. But that only, again, was only for probably about my first year. Because in my second year, I actually broke into the first team. So
who did you clean the boots for?
I think at first it would have been, it sort of varied a little bit. We didn't actually have a specific player, but I remember Danny Sonner, Martin O'Connor, Grange. I think I cleaned his boots at one stage. So it was whoever, you know, we had a rota, so whoever was on boots, you know, you pretty much cleaned.
But for them people, you don't mind, do you?
Oh, no. That, like I say, Tom, I grew up a Blues fan, so, you know, actually people like Michael Johnson, Grange, and Martin O'Connor, I'd been in the stands as a season ticket holder watching these guys for years. So it was a privilege, really, for me to do that.
Then you said you were in the academy, but it was all rather sudden. Were you 18 when you broke
yeah.
in?
Yeah. So, as I say, my first year, 16 to 17, I'd had a really good year at Blues. And I'd Brian Eastick was the academy director and manager at the time, and had always pushed me sort of a year above myself. So even when I was a schoolboy, he'd had me playing in the under 17s. He was under 17s and under 19s back then, and then a reserve team. So he'd always had me playing above myself. So when I came in as a first year at 16, 17, he had me playing in the under 19s. And looking back, that was great for me because I was playing against lads 2 or 3 years older than myself, and it just developed me probably a little bit quicker than the rest. And then I managed to get into the reserve team quite regularly that first year. Trevor Francis was manager. So then when my second year started, I was still 17. I was actually involved in a few pre-season friendlies with the first team. I remember going to QPR away and a game at home. Where I came on for 10-15 minutes. So for me, that was incredible. So, and then that year, Trevor Francis obviously had me in a couple of squads leading up to Christmas, but I never made the bench. And then obviously he left the club around Christmas time. Steve Bruce came in the January, and I literally, I think it was one of his first games, West Brom away on a Tuesday night at the Hawthorns. Literally threw me straight in. So I hadn't been on the bench for the first team before this, threw me straight in and started me at the Hawthorns in January. And I just turned 18 in the December. So I was actually a second year scholar at that point. So it literally happened overnight. It was incredible.
How was your nerves on that game?
It's crazy, really, because I a lot of people, I've told the story over the last few years that, you know, my dad and my mom and all my aunties and uncles, I mentioned the Blue Noses, they knew before me because I think Steve Bruce, and credit to him, you know, he informed, I think it was Julia Shelton at the time, who was secretary, that I'd be starting the game. So give my family a heads up to get to the game if they could. And so my dad and my mom knew before me. I only found out literally at the ground. We got there an hour and a half, hour and 45 before the game in the dressing room. He named the team and I was starting. So I didn't have too much time to think about it. It was just literally right, get ready, get out there and play. And I look back on it and it just went so quick. I remember getting a full-on elbow into the face from Jason Roberts in about the first 2 minutes of the game. And I always remember thinking that's my welcome to men's football. But yeah, the game itself just flew by, and obviously we lost the game in the end 1-0, but it was incredible to actually be there. A packed Hawthorns, obviously, you know, you've been there many a time, Tom, for the derby, and it was just incredible. It really was. And to see all the Blues fans behind the goal, it was crazy to think that I'd been there so many times watching Blues at West Brom and obviously being in the stands, and now I'm on the pitch affecting the game. So, it was incredible.
Who was in the team then that day? Do you remember?
So, yeah, I think there was like Martin Granger, Darren Purse, Jono, Michael Johnson, Jeff Kenner, Brian Hughes, Tommy Mooney, Jeff Horsfield, Stan Lazaridis, Andy Johnson. So, we...
Good team.
It was, yeah. Again, that was sort of the kickstart, really, when Steve Bruce came in, that we sort of hit a real rich vein of form and had a great second half to the season, which obviously led to us going to Cardiff and getting promoted.
I suppose, really, let's get it not out of the way, but that promotion, to get into the... Because from memory, you weren't in the team before, were you, before the final?
No, so that season, obviously, so I'd made my debut at the Hawthorns that night, obviously early January or mid-January. Just... quickly, I mean, you just mentioned there, the squad of players I came into, Tom, was, I always say to this day, I was so, so fortunate that, you know, they'd been together a while anyway. A lot of the lads, like I mentioned, Martin Granger, Jono and Percy and you know, Jeff Kennedy, these guys, Martin O'Connor, they'd all been there and been through the heartache, really, of the 3 or 4 years previous of trying to get promotion. And obviously the youngest by far was me and Andy Johnson, really, and even AJ was probably 3 years older than me. So, you know, I came into that environment and they were great with me. Like, they got on me in the right way, but ultimately sort of got their arm around me as well, understanding.
They looked after you then?
They looked after me, yeah, and gave me such a great grounding, you know, for an 18-year-old making his debut in the Championship at that time. And they were brilliant. I played I think it ended up being 15 games that second half of the season. And Steve Bruce had bought me, he'd take me out of the team in certain games just to sort of give me a rest now and again. And then the Millwall, we obviously drew Millwall in the semi-finals, played at home the first leg and I played in that game and we drew 1-1. And then the away leg at the Den, he sort of put me on the bench and said, you know, this is going to be a real hostile environment. I need... obviously the more experienced lads to go and do it for us. And so, yeah, so I didn't actually play in the second leg. I was on the bench.
It was made for Oliver Tebbeley though, wasn't it?
Tebbs was exactly what we needed that game. And obviously, you know, that Millwall team at that time with Muscat and players like that, it was literally Tim Cahill. They were
good,
they were team. Yeah. Dion Dublin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So so I didn't play in the second leg. And then when it got to the final, obviously I never expected to start. Again, I thought, obviously, it's a huge game and I just wanted to be involved. I wanted to be in the 16. I wanted to be on the bench and luckily I was.
I remember that game as a player. I don't know what you thought when Tebbeley's tackling without his boots on.
that summed him up, you know, and that's why, you know, everybody and obviously even fans speak very fondly of him to this day, don't they? He just literally would run through a brick wall for you, and he was such a great guy as well. And he was fantastic to have in your team. He wasn't so much when you were training with him and he was on the opposite team, but and he wasn't actually the greatest of trainers, if I'm honest. He on a Friday,
wasn't he? He was a unit, an athletic
unit.
Oh
God, yeah. On a Friday, we'd always sort of have a vote for worst player, worst trainer, and the the following Friday, you had to bring in all the chocolate and treats for the lads. And Tebs was probably the most voted player on a Friday. So, but when it comes to game day, yeah, you could bank on him being there and relying on him.
In that game, and when Stern John stuck that one away, I mean, afterwards, well, you know, you were there, you were on the pitch.
Yeah.
I mean, Colin Tatton, myself, the players on the pitch, you know, Wallace, World War III outside.
Incredible, yeah. I mean, my dad was at that game and I remember ringing him. Obviously, you was on the pitch with us, Tom, weren't you? And my dad said, you know, outside, it's absolute chaos. You know, there's cars on fire and there's police everywhere and it's just... It was carnage. I don't think we got back to Birmingham until probably 2-3 o'clock in the morning. So, but obviously we got to the final, which is something that, you know, as I said, that group of players and the club had strived for the last sort of 4 or 5 years before, and it just ended in heartache. So this time we'd actually got over that first hurdle and we was in the final. So we didn't care.
How big was that? I mean, you've mentioned it already, that team spirit, that camaraderie, that jerseys hang together attitude. How big was that?
Oh, it was huge, Tom. And I truly believe to this day that, you know, that was what got us up. We were talented. We had some, you know, very good players, as, you know, as I've mentioned. And but I think that team spirit and, you know, I've been involved since, obviously, and all through my career in some good dressing rooms and some good, you know, squads that have been together. But, you know, I'd probably be hard pushed to say that anyone beats that season and that group of players, because like I mentioned, that, you know, they were just proper honest guys who, you know, wanted to win, went about it in the right way, and yeah, that took us all the way there. So, you know, that's, you know, to try and recreate, obviously every manager and every club around the world tried to recreate that, and everyone talks about team spirit, and it is so huge. And we were just, you know, lucky that we had that in abundance that year.
It also had decent players.
Like I say, yeah, I mean, players that were experienced, they played at, you know, some very good clubs, and, you know, sometimes in football it just comes together, doesn't it, Tom? And that year it did for us. You know, we had the right characters, the right, you know, talent, but as I say, the team spirit was phenomenal.
Then comes the final, and just tell us about, you know, there you are at the Millennium, and it's a final, and I mean, I can only speak from where I was in the press box. The atmosphere from the Blues fans was just electric.
Yeah, it was, and even when we turned up at the ground, and you know, on the way into the ground, obviously Cardiff was, you know, renowned. We'd been there the year before, hadn't we, in the Worthington Cup final and lost. So, you know, the Blues fans had learned from that year that we, you know, you had to get there early, because I mean, that year against Liverpool, I was half an hour late for the game, you know, got caught in the traffic. So even arriving, you know, it was just a sea of blue. You know, Blues fans had gone down there really early, and you just felt that vibe, you know, that vibe from them, that energy. And even when you got inside the stadium, I mean, the roof was on, wasn't it? So it just, you know, it captured all the noise, and it was just a constant drone of noise the whole way through, even when you came out to warm up. And yeah, it's, you know, it's probably one of the best atmospheres I've played in. And, you know, the noise, as you say, that was made that day, especially from the Blues end, was incredible.
How did you come to take that penalty? Was it decided before, the order and stuff?
So, no, I think, so we'd practice penalties all the way through from semi-final onwards. Steve Bruce had us, you know, doing the walk from the halfway line. Obviously you can't replicate the actual, you know, day, but and obviously with the crowd, but so walk, and he was adamant, you know, pick your spot, know what you're going to do, and all the way the lead up. I know it's only, you know, behind closed doors, but I'd been hitting my penalties, and I'd, you know, I felt really confident. I mean, Ian Bennett and Nico Vassam were the keepers at the time, and even them two sort of knew what I was going to do, but I was hitting it that well and true that, you know, even they weren't saving them in training, so I was very confident. I think, and you knew who the main penalty takers were going to be. Stern John obviously was very good. Brian Hughes loved pressure penalties. Stan Lazaridis had took them years previous in playoff games. You know, the only one that we were missing was Darren Purse, because he obviously wasn't available for the game. But again, I think he just got to the end of the game, and who was available, who was on the pitch. I think Tommy Mooney had gone off. He was obviously a penalty taker for us. So I think he was, yeah, he was left, who was, you know, your go-to penalty takers, and actually who fancied taking one.
There's a a teammate of yours reckons you stole his thunder and his glory. He should have took the fifth penalty.
It's crazy, really, because I've said it and I spoke to Hughie quite recently, actually. And, you know, he was the one that, you know, when I made my debut, me and him played in the centre of midfield together. And Hughie, you know, as Blues fans, you know, Tommy, he was more of a goal scoring midfielder and so talented at the front end of the pitch. And, you know, such a great player technically. When I came into the team, I was full of energy. I was box to box. I was everywhere. He had to kind of rein himself in and be the more central one and sit a little bit more and sacrificed a lot of his game for me, really. And then obviously on the day, he was given the choice. I always say this to him, and you know, he'll give me a wry smile when he remembers it. But you know, it got to the point where Mark Bowen was the assistant. He came to me and said, "Do you want to go four or five?" And I said, "You know, well, who's going to, you know, decide this, me and who?" And he went, "Hughie." I said, "Well, ask Hughie." And I knew full well Hughie always loved the pressure penalty, and he would go five. And then Mark Bowen came back to me and just went four, and that was it. It was settled. So yeah. So the fact that, you know, I got the chance to win it on the fourth penalty. I always say to Hughie, "I did give you the chance, Hughie, to go four or five." So I don't feel too guilty.
I remember that moment so clearly. I mean, sitting with Broads, and I'll be honest with you, I've gone, "What's the kid taking it for?"
But that's the thing, Todd. And again, this is something I remember clearly. And I don't know who took the penalty before me for Norwich. It might have been Darren Eady, I think, or Easton, sorry. I think Craig Easton took it, and I'd only just scored. Nico got a hand to it, a really good hand to it, and only managed to palm it into the side of the net. And just before that, I was thinking, I want him to score it. I actually want to take the penalty. And as soon as he scored, I think if you could have got a player cam on me, I was gone. I was straight off. I was walking. And I remember a little bit of a gasp and it was the Blues fans going. It's probably you, Tom, and you and Broad, yeah. But yeah, I think no one expected me to take the next penalty, I don't think. I think if you ask any Blues fan, they would have, you know, thought again it would have been Hughie. There was, you know, Jeff Kenner, Grange.
Experienced pros.
Loads of experience on the pitch. So when I stepped up, I think all the playoff heartbreak, all the penalty heartbreak that we'd had years leading up to that, you know, I think Blues fans are looking at it and going, "We're trusting an 18-year-old to go and put this penalty away for us." And as I say, I say to this day, and people, you know, still look at me bemused when I say I was super confident. I always knew I was going to score. And I even asked the ref, you know, just to double check if I scored this, we had actually won it, you know, because I was already thinking about, you know, where I was going to run off to and celebrate. I was that confident I was going to score.
A lot of people say when they walk towards the goal, taking a penalty, an important one, the goals get smaller. But obviously to you, it was just nothing.
I'll be honest, Tom, when I looked up and it was one of them. The goal did look a little bit small, I'm not going to lie, but as soon as I put the ball down, I just knew exactly where I was going to go. You know, Rob Green was the goalkeeper at the time for Norwich. And,
good keeper as well, by the way.
It was a good, yeah. But I just knew. I just had this feeling that I was going to score, and I hit it as you know, as sweet as I possibly could. It went exactly where I wanted it to go, right into the side netting. And I always say someone, I forget the photographer's name, you know, which is bad, but he took a great picture of, from behind the goal of the moment the ball hit in the net. And Rob Green literally had just shifted left just slightly. So the ball had hit the net before he even dives. That's how well I'd hit the ball. And I haven't took a better penalty since, you know, I've scored some, but yeah, it was just meant to be, Tom. I always say that moment was there, just, you know, and how I felt then, the supreme confidence. I've took penalties in charity games and felt nervous, more nervous. It's incredible, really, when I think about it, but yeah, it was just meant to be.
And then pandemonium broke out.
Well, pitch invasion at Cardiff, and it was crazy. There was lads on the pitch that I'd known, I'd been to school with, a couple of lads I'd played for Arden Forest for, was on the pitch. And yeah, it was just chaos for about 10 minutes, wasn't it, before it sort of all got...
But a joyful chaos. It wasn't...
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, there was no... Obviously, there was no, you know... I think it was just complete relief from Blues fans. It was just an explosion, wasn't it, of relief, of joy. As I say, the years leading up to it and had been pure heartache, hadn't they? And we'd finally done it. And that obviously, the day had been so emotionally draining, going to extra time and penalties. And I think it was just an overspill, wasn't it, of emotion.
I remember getting you on the line, my guy on the pitch with the microphone and headphones, put them on you and I'm talking away to you. And not realising we made you miss the team pitch.
But so I think it was dance, wasn't it? It was on the pitch. Yeah. And I just literally, you know, obviously I'm chatting to you and you know, I think in the corner of my arm, looking at, hang on, they've got sort of congregated for the picture. And I've seen a few champagne bottles being spread. I was thinking, oh, you're killing
me. You should have told me to clear off. You said clear off, I've got a celebration.
If you look at the pictures, actually, you just see me on a couple of the ones at the back. I'm jumping up. I think I'm on Percy's back trying to get in some of the photos. So, no, like I say, it was unbelievable.
A special moment, though, wasn't it? Not just for you, but for the team, for the club, for the fans. A really, really special moment.
Yeah, like I say, Tom, you know, I think you always say, don't you, that, you know, you go through heartbreak and sort of near misses. And then when you actually do get over that hurdle, you know, or get promotion, whatever it is, you know, it makes it even more sweet. And we'd been through the mill for four straight seasons, hadn't we, in the playoffs and penalties as well. We, you know, we'd lost there in the Worthington Cup final the year before to Liverpool. So being in that, you know, in that stadium, going to penalties, thinking, are we going to, you know, get beat on pens again? To actually then win it and score all our penalties. That was incredible. Was just, yeah, like I say, it was just an overspill of emotion and, you know, relief, really. You know, I don't think we could have gone through another playoff heartbreak, could we?
And, you know, once it's all, and the fans, I mean, it'll stick in my memory forever. But then you've got the realisation that you're in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. What was, just before that, what was Steve Bruce like as a manager for you?
He gave me my debut, and for that I'll be forever grateful, because he didn't have to. You know, he came in, like I say, and we were sort of languishing mid-table, probably just slightly bottom half when he came in, and you know, he had a couple of reserve games, I think, for me, and thought, right, I'm gonna stick him in and trust me to you know, it is a little bit like sink or swim. Like I say, I hadn't been on the bench before my debut, and he sort of threw me in a derby game at West Brom away, so a real, you know, big game. He put that trust in me. So, and then to be fair, that season, I thought, you know, with the way he handled me, brought me out of the team in certain occasions. Looking back, I wanted to play every minute, obviously, but you know, in hindsight, he looked after me, and yeah, like I say, it all fell into place. And he was, you know, responsible, I say, one, for giving me my debut for my boyhood club, and allowing me then to be part of what is, you know, one of my, you know, my proudest moment, obviously, as a player.
You played a few Premier League games, and then all of a sudden it wasn't quite right. You're out on loan at Sunderland, was it?
Yeah, so again, we got to the Premier League, and I played, say, 15, 16 Championship games. That was my career to date, and rightly so. Obviously, we went and Steve Bruce strengthened the squad, brought in obviously experienced players, Aliou Cisse and your Robbie Savages came into the football club, Stephen Clements, all in my position. So I knew I was going to have to sort of be patient. So for the first two seasons in the Premier League, I was, you know, Steve Bruce didn't allow me to go out on loan. He wanted me to be part of the group. I travelled everywhere. I was on the bench, made probably a handful of appearances in them first two seasons. But I was involved in every match day. I went to every game, experienced the Premier League. And then it was that third season then when he said to me at the start of the year, you're right, you know, Mick McCarthy at Sunderland has said, do you want to go and play some games? And it was just right. I thought, yeah, I need to go and get some games now, and spent the first part of that third season on loan at Sunderland, which was ended up being fantastic for me.
Massive club.
Loved my time there, Tom. It was the first time I moved away from home, from Birmingham. And obviously, probably can't get any further north, can you, in England to go to play in Sunderland. I was actually staying in a hotel in Newcastle, and the whole experience was fantastic. And that year, again, I went into a fantastic squad at Sunderland. They ended up going up that year. So I got a winner's medal as well, to, you know, from getting up into the Championship, from the Championship to the Premier League. But yeah, so I played there till just after Christmas, and then Steve Bruce recalled me because we had some injuries, and my first game back for Blues was Villa away in the league, which again I went straight in and started, and then I pretty much played that whole second half of the season in the Premier League for Blues, which ended up being my best spell for the club in the Premier League.
What was that result at Villa?
That was the 2-0 one, I think, when David Dunn scored, and I can't remember who scored. Was it Stan? No, yeah, it might be Stan, I think. Yeah, Stan with a diving header. So 2-0. And then we won the reverse fixture as well at home, 2-0, when I think Emil Heskey scored and Julian Gray. So that was the time we had the sort of the voodoo on Villa as well. But yeah, that second half of the season was great for me because I played a real I had a run of Premier League games and was playing some really, some of my best football, really. And that's when I felt like, right, I've arrived and, I can handle it in the Premier League.
Blue Nose, been with the club as a kid, right the way through, scored the goal that got him into the Premier League. And then all of a sudden, you're not wanted. You're on your way to West Brom. How tough was that for a local lad?
Well, it was, and in all fairness to Steve Bruce, he was, clear and transparent with me the whole time. And, he said to me, I don't want you to go. It's totally your decision, and Brian Robson was the guy at the other end of the phone, which happened to be one of my idols, or my dad's idol anyway, growing up. And he was a player that my dad told me from day one to watch and model my game on a little bit. He was a box to box midfielder, did everything defensively, and attacking. And all of a sudden you've got him on the other end of the phone wanting you at his football club. So, and Steve Bruce said to me, listen, you potentially might play next season, or, he's bringing other players into the club. And I always felt at Blues that, I loved it. And like I say, it's all I knew up until that point. I was 21. I felt like, it was my next part of my journey to grow up, really, and leave the club and continue my football journey. And yeah, so I ended up going to West Brom. And like I say, it wasn't a case of me being pushed out or anything. I look back and often think, if I'd stayed at Blues, what might have happened? What would have stayed at the club and, for years to come? But, I made a decision at that time, which I felt was the best one for me.
But nevertheless, it was a move. You played 50-odd games for them and scored probably the goal of the season.
West Brom, yeah. Again, obviously, I went straight in and we was in the Premier League. And again, we sort of, it was a season where it was up and down and we struggled and then we'd have good patches and ultimately ended us in us going down. And I still say to this day, I think we were a little bit unfortunate. I felt like we had a little bit of bad luck towards the end of that season. But yeah, as you say, Tom, again, it was a great learning experience for me moving away from Blues because, as I say, I was a Blue Nose, the Blues fans, were always fantastic to me and showed me so much, love and affection. Whereas when I went to West Brom, it was a clean slate. I'm not I wasn't one of them as I was with Blues. I grew up a Blue Nose. So I was having to earn, their respect. And that first season was tough. It was probably the first time I'd received criticism from fans. And that was a real new learning experience for me that, I was thinking, right, there's certain games I'd play in and hear certain comments from fans and thinking, am I totally won them over here? And that first season was tough at times, but ultimately one of the best things that could have happened to me moving forward.
I suppose really as well, it was, you stayed in the Midlands and, but you sort of were on the move again. It weren't that long. I mean, you got to the playoff final with West Brom. Let's not forget, you played in the playoff final, didn't you?
Yeah. That second season, as I say, Tom, was again one of my better seasons. I came back with a real grit and determination, I still felt there was some West Brom fans that obviously none of them had seen the real true me. I had struggled that first season, but second season, back in the Championship, I just, was sort of, pedal to the floor. I'm going to try and excel and played in nearly pretty much nearly every game. I only missed a couple of games that season. Obviously got to the playoff final in a great squad of players again. And we lost in the final to Derby on a day where, you know, I still can't... Well, and obviously we lost 1-0, but you know, with that squad of players and everything, you know, I was adamant we were going to get promoted back to the Premier League. So I really enjoyed that second season at West Brom. And again, you know, that propelled me then to move on in the summer to Preston.
And, you know, I think you became well-liked at Preston. I mean, you played a lot of games for Preston. I think nearly 100 games for them.
Yeah.
It was a good move for you, wasn't it?
It was at the time, yeah. And again, it was weird, really. Tony Mowbray at West Brom was sort of, you know, rotating the squad a little bit that second season I was there. And so I probably started half the games and come off the bench in half. And so I was involved in every game, but, it, you know, I'd start and be on the bench, start and be on the bench. And at the time, I wanted to be a starter every week. And again, Tony Mowbray said to me that, you know, he'd like me there, but it's totally my decision if I want to go. And Preston had come in with an offer. And I just felt like, you know, at the time, I want to go and play like 46 games. I want to start every game. And, you know, again, looking back in hindsight, was it the right decision? At the time, I felt it was. But, you know, we ended up missing out on the playoffs and West Brom went up that next season. So potentially, if I'd stayed at West Brom, I could have been back in the Premier League. But, you know, listen, I don't regret any decisions I made. It was, you know, at the time, that's what I felt was best. And yeah, Preston was, again, I moved away from home for the first time properly. You know, the Sunderland one was obviously only for 6 months, but this was, I signed a 4-year deal, got a place of my own up north in Lytham St. Annes and lived away from Birmingham for the first time. So again, you know, loved Preston. Again, it was ups and downs as there always is. But, you know, I felt, you know, that club, you know, again, I've played the most games for them, barring obviously being at Solihull Moors now. You know, the bulk of my appearances in my career came at Preston. So it's a club I respect and think of fondly.
All that travelling around the country didn't improve your ability to navigate, did it? I'll tell the listeners, he was my pundit for a game at Millwall for Blues. And we went to the game, and coming back, I've said, look, because you were there anyway. I can't remember exactly, but you were there anyway, and I was bringing you back.
Yeah.
And I normally go M1, M25, down all the back way, but it gets you there. But Cart said, listen, I played here. I'll take you home through the city. What a mistake that was. He kept going past this place, and he kept going, that's where I had my groin up. He said that four times as he's navigating us. It took us about 5 hours to get through the city centre. God, hopeless.
I still say to this day, Tom, you know, there was a car full of people and no one was really making a decision. So I kind of took the armband and said, right, let's just go this way. You know, no one really wants to make the decision. And it ultimately backfired on me, didn't it? That it took forever. I think it was in Leicester Square at one point.
Exactly. I mean, you can see I'm over it. But then Millwall, and then you drop down a division, such as your desire for playing, you're at Cheltenham Town. Was that a
big thing? Obviously,
because you could have hung on, I would have imagined. Why all of a sudden Cheltenham?
So I left Preston. So that fourth year when I left Preston, I was out of contract. And Phil Brown had actually said to me, coming back the next season, he said that, you know, I'd like you to stay. I'd like you to give you a new deal. And he was having a bit of a problem with the chairman at the time, trying to sort deals and everything. And so I'd done about 2 weeks pre-season with Preston. And then I'd obviously given up my apartment up there and I was having to travel and stuff. And I can't remember exactly how it came about, but Chris Hughton at Blues had contacted my agent and said, oh, you know, Darren can come and train here if he wants. Obviously, then I didn't have to travel. I could still go in and train and do my pre-season. So I ended up going back to Blues. And I think it was nearly 6 or 7 weeks I was there training Chris Hughton, and I was in dialogue with him constantly. And I think he was quite keen for me to stick around and potentially we could sort a deal. But obviously that was again, he was trying to get a few players out the door and what have you. And so during that pre-season spell, I was out of contract, training the Blues. Phil Brown at Preston was saying, you know, there may or may not be something here. I ended up going down to Brighton for a week and training there with Gus Poyet as manager. And had a really interesting week down there, and had a good, real good conversation with him at the end of it, which resulted in him basically saying that, you know, I like you as a player, but you're not the type of midfield player I'm looking for right now. And then I went to play in a game at Nottingham Forest at their training ground. So Steve Cottrell was manager at the time, and I contacted my agent and said, I've got this game arranged at the training ground. Can Darren come down and play? There's a lot of first team players playing in it. So, you know, I can have a look at him and potentially, you know, he can, you know, try and earn a deal. So I went and played in this game, 45 minutes, literally just before the halftime whistle. We're winning the game 4-0. I'm flying around the pitch. I'm feeling great. I see my agents on the side of the pitch talking to Steve Cottrell, and I later found out talking about potential deal and figures. And then I literally go to sprint off on a minute before half time, and I feel my groin go. Turned out I tore my groin, my adductor, and literally in the blink of an eye, I'd gone from sort of being 27, 28 in the prime of my career, trying to earn a contract, to then all of a sudden, you know, a torn adductor, out of contract. And it ended up then me having a full season out the game under no contract with anybody. And having to have two operations before then actually getting fit towards the end of that season. So I missed a full season. And then at the end of that, obviously then I wouldn't say kind of forgotten about, but I had to sort of really then persuade clubs to even give me a trial or give me an opportunity. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, you know, I tried this a year before and got injured out of contract. You know, it's a risk me going in anywhere to prove myself. I could get injured again. I couldn't afford to not. Remember, I had a year not earning any money. I wasn't under contract. And so, yeah, it was a real tough year that for me. And obviously that's when, you know, I came with you, Tom, and you kept me involved in the game by obviously coming and commentating with you on games week in, week out for Blues. I was training at Blues still. Chris Shuton and the medical team were fantastic. They took me in and looked after me, and I'd done all my rehab at Blues. And, you know, I say to this day, Chris Shuton, you know, he kind of saved my career, really. He was under no obligation to have me in, and you know, I was an assigned player. But yeah, he gave me the full use of the facilities, the physios. So yeah, that's how I come to miss a year of my career, really. And as I say, that next season then, it was Mark Yates at Cheltenham who finally said, listen, Dan, we'll give you 6 months and you can come and get some games, get yourself back in the you know, the football world, and sort of, you know, people can come and see you and watch you play again.
Which was good. And but there was I remember reading somewhere that Mark Yates, an ex-Blues man himself, of course, said it was about wages. But you denied that at the time, didn't you? I seem to remember.
Yeah, so I ended up staying there full season for Cheltenham. We got to the playoffs and lost to Northampton in the end. And at the end of that season, it was kind of a situation, you know, do I stay at the club? And you know, I'd had a brief chat with him about it. And you know, realistically, it was nothing else really said. And then after, you know, when he sort of the release list goes out or players leaving the club, you know, I was on it, and we hadn't really had any much conversation. So I ended up leaving Cheltenham and then actually signing for a manager that I'd known most of my career, who actually tried to sign me when I was at Blues and he was at Watford in AD Boothroyd, and ended up signing 2 years at Northampton.
Interesting at Cheltenham. I'll never forget you, man of the match, you won a leg of lamb, and you're a vegetarian family.
Well, back then I was a meat eater, Tom. So this will be a picture that you're killing all my vegan endorsements now, Tom. So this is like 2011, 2012. So the club was sponsored by Butchers, and if you got the man of the match for the home games, the butcher gave you basically just a lump of meat, whatever the meat was that he bought to the game for. And the picture's out there somewhere. There's it'll resurface, Tom. I've got no doubt. Well, I've been vegan now for 3.5 years. So, that picture's going to haunt me till the day I die, I think. And, you know, any future vegan endorsements, I think they're, I've got to tell them about that straight off the bat.
but your dad benefited. But we'll talk about that. You went to Northampton. I suppose, really, again, they've been in the playoff final. I mean, it was a good move for you.
Yeah, as I say, AD Boothill was the manager, and I had a huge respect for AD. And I'd sort of known him throughout my career, and he told me that he tried to sign me at Watford when I was at Blues, which I had no clue about at the time. It was only years later when he told me that that I found out. But again, went to Northampton, probably at a time when, you know, the club was on the back of the playoff final last the year before, and you know, the squad was a little bit thin, to be honest. And we had some real big injuries, and AD, you know, was trying his best to try and get the squad sorted for the start of the season. But we just stumbled out the blocks. And unfortunately, by Christmas, AD had gone, and we were languishing at the bottom of the table. We managed to go on a phenomenal run and stay up. Literally, I think we stayed up on the last day officially. So it was, some season that time. I think if I look back on my career, that was a season that was so Jekyll and Hyde. The first half of the season, you know, we as I say, we stumbled out the blocks and couldn't get any momentum. I was the new signing at the club, and obviously AD went. And there was, I remember getting a lot of messages over Twitter. I'd not long been on Twitter back then, from some fans, you know, saying, you know, you've been this, you that, and you know, you've been crap. And I just, again, I didn't respond to any of them. I really wanted to. And I thought, right, I'm just going to get my head down and grind away. And then, as I say, we turned it around second half of the season. I ended up winning Player of the Year at the end of the season. We stayed up. And some of them fans that were on my back around Christmas time, you know, replied to me and sent me some nice messages, actually, at the end of the season. And so, one, it was kind of a real Jekyll and Hyde season. But two, it gave me a little bit of an insight to social media. You know, that sort of frustrating time when I was getting them messages and stuff, I really, really wanted to respond and go back at some people. You know, ultimately, then people then sort of come back with their tails between the legs and said, you know, I was wrong. You know, you turned it round, and, you know, you proved your worth, and, you know, got us out of trouble, and, you know, and ended up getting Player of the Year. So, it was some season that, and that's probably one of the toughest seasons in terms of physically and mentally I've had, I think, looking back.
Chris Wilder did okay, didn't he, after that? Chris Wilder went on to do okay.
He did very well, yeah.
From then, though, it's out of the Football League, into the National League. And for a ball-playing midfielder, that can be a baptism of fire, because it's pretty physical.
It is, Tom, yeah. And like I say, I was lucky I went to a club in Forest Green that obviously wanted to play a certain brand of football, had a decent budget, obviously, for that standard. And we had some good players. So I went into a squad that was pretty much ready to and primed to have a real good go at the National League. But yeah, it was a real eye-opener, Tom, that, you know, it's a bit humbling a little bit if you're a player that's played at a good level and you go down there, you've got to find your feet very quickly. You know, it can be physical, it can be, you know, mentally draining at times as well. But it was a challenge, but again, I went into a really good squad there, and we went to the playoff final and ended up losing to Grimsby that first season after being top for a lot of the season. Obviously, the one thing that still wrangles me to this day, that the National League only have one team promoted automatically, and it's quite scary now that I've played in the National League, I think, 4 or 5 seasons, and I finished second on, you know, 4 of them occasions. So, and got promoted once. So, it's crazy. It really is. It's a crazy, crazy scenario they've got going on. But, I had 2 great years at Forest Green, playoff final the first year and lost, but then obviously being part of the promotion to the league in the second season.
From the Premier League to the National League, I mean, how have you dealt with that mentally?
Again, I think the pivotal moment, obviously, that year when I got injured. So I was playing in the Championship. You know, I'd been Premier League and Championship to that point. I was 27, 28. I'd had 10 years of playing at them levels. And that year out, as I say, you do become a little bit of the forgotten man. And one thing that I did have, sort of, and my agent Phil had Phil Sproson had a challenge with, was when I got fit and after that year out, you know, people, you know, managers and coaches thought I was older than what I was because I made my debut at sort of 17, 18. You know, Phil was getting a lot of managers going back, well, what, is he 31, 32 now? And Phil's like, no, he's only 28. You know, he's, and they're like, oh, he seems like he's been around for a while. And so I think a lot of teams sort of maybe passed on me or didn't give me an opportunity based on they thought I was a lot older than I actually was, probably looked it. But yeah, so that was the pivotal point, obviously. You know, and then I had to go to League Two to get games for Cheltenham, to get myself back in the shop window, so to speak. And obviously then age plays a part. I was hitting my 30s, you know, and that plays a massive part in recruitment now. There's no doubt. And, you know, then I found it a real challenge to try and get back up the league.
Did it really affect you, do you think, reaching the playoff final, winning the playoff, which they got promoted, and not being a part, not getting the chance to play in the league again with Forest Green?
I think I felt a huge sense of pride that I'd helped the club get to the league. You know, and there was obviously players that had never played in the league that were part of that squad that then got the chance to do it. So no, I never felt, you know, that I missed out on that. It would have been nice, obviously, but to be part of, you know, that history for the club and helping them get into the league was, you know, more, you know, enough for me anyway. So so yeah, like I say, I've sort of covered the whole, you know, levels now in terms of Premier League all the way down to National League, and you know, the experiences I've had, you know, that seen the difference in levels and level of player, level of opposition and teams, you know, has been sort of, looking back now, it's invaluable really. And as I move into, you know, my coaching role now and sort of transitioning into the other side of football, you know, it's all sort of knowledge that I've gained over the years that's going to now push me, hopefully, and this is my aim now, is to push back up the football pyramid through my coaching, and, you know, never know, management along the way. So I'm hoping to go full circle at some point.
I suppose Solihull Moors, I seem to remember, and if I'm wrong, forgive me, that you could have stayed in the league, you could have gone into the league, but you chose Solihull Moors in the National League.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of hot offers, you know, on the table from a couple of clubs in League Two. But again, it was I was at a stage where, you know, I was 33, 34, and it wasn't so much really the money, so to speak, but it was location as well. You know, I'd done a lot of moving around in my career and felt like I just needed something now that was, you know, fitting for where I was at. And I wanted to start obviously branching into the coaching world and start to, you know, get my badges. And it was just a case of, you know, Solihull was obviously a club that's on my doorstep. I've known it all the way through my life. My dad played for Moor Green back in the day. Yeah. So, you know, it just felt like, you know, I wanted to be part of that and try and help them establish himself in the National League, but ultimately then get the club into the league for the first time, which, you know, obviously Blues is my club, but my actual hometown club is obviously Solihull. So I thought, you know, at the time it would be great to try and help the club develop.
You've played there for some time now, but also it's helped you develop the coaching side.
Yeah, so obviously they've got the academy alongside, and then the F&E program, so the football and education, which I've been, you know, sort of doing alongside playing for the three seasons previous to this one, and then coming into this year, you know, my sort of thinking was I was going to be coaching a lot more. I've ended up playing, you know, some games as well due to injuries and obviously with COVID and everything else. But yeah, Jimmy Shan came to the club with Richard Beale, and Jimmy, as you know, was phenomenal with me from day one. He's one of the best coaches I've worked with, excellent detailed coach, and for me to have learned off him and obviously Richard Beale as well, this year has just propelled my coaching knowledge, my ability as a coach, and just see sort of what coach I want to be and sort of where I could go with it, really. You know, gave me a real confidence. and everything I've just said to you there, Tom, obviously the knowledge I've been able to gather over my career, the managers I've worked under, the coaches I've worked under, players I've played with, you know, this is all stuff now that I'm going to use and hopefully, you know, keep developing into to the best coach I can be. So, you know, Solihull Moors has given me that opportunity and obviously, you know, 3 years in the academy and the F&E, and this year actually being in a first team environment and coaching first team. So, yeah, hopefully this is the foundation and the stepping stone to kick on in my coaching career now.
How important and big deal was it for you to actually wear the three Lions shirts at two levels?
Oh, that was huge. I mean, yeah, I mean, going right back to the very beginning and I managed to get my, I think, under 19 call up. You know, I was playing with players like Gary O'Neill, Colton Cole, Jermaine Genus, Andrew Lonigan, you know, Glenn Johnson. So I had a real good sort of crop of players and squads that I was a part of back then, Jermaine Pennant. So, yeah, I mean, every time I played for England at 19s level and then on to under 20s, I played probably predominantly most of my appearances came in the under 20s. I'd played in the first team at Blues by then. So yeah, going away with England was just a different feel. It just felt, it's hard to explain really, you know, when you stood out there listening to the anthem, the national anthem and playing against obviously your Italy's, your Germany's, your Argentina's, it just felt like, I think you talked earlier, Tom, about, you know, when did I feel like I really had a chance of being a professional footballer? You know, those moments literally just filled me with so much confidence that I'm actually a good player. I can progress. I can get better. So if anything, the England appearances, you know, for the 19s and 20s just give me that extra bit of confidence that I needed and reassurance that, you know, I can really have a good career.
Are you too nice, Darren? Are you too easy to leave on the bench? Are you too easy to move? You know what I mean? Are you too nice? Are you a manager's dream?
I'd say I am, Tom. Yeah, and I remember having this conversation with Alan Irvine. So Alan Irvine came to Preston, I think in my second season, and I had a period where I was on the bench and I was just a constant on the bench. And I remember going and seeing him and, I mean, listen, I've played with plenty of players over my career that, you know, you leave them out for one game and they kick up an absolute stink. They're like big babies. And, you know, they would get an opportunity the next game or they'd go in, they'd get back in the team. And I remember going and speaking to him and Alan, I mean, you know, Alan, Tom, he's an absolute top guy. And again, one of the best coaches I've worked with. And I said to him, I said, listen, you know, just because I get on with things and I come in and I don't kick up a fuss, I don't come here and smash your door down and demand why I'm not playing, don't think it doesn't hurt me. I said, you know, I think I more or less used them words, Tom. I said, you know, because I'm being too nice, do I need to be a bit of a, you know, and he turned around to me and he said, listen, Dad, he said, don't change. He said, you know, you are, you know, what a manager wants, you get on with it. Yes, you know, it might be a bit easier for some managers to leave you out because they know they're not going to get, you know, the a rocket from you there on the Monday morning and you come in and banging their door down. And, you know, from that moment on, I think, you know, I took them words and thought, you know what, I want to act professionally and I want my reputation as a player and as a character more than anything to be that, you know, I never tossed off a training session. I never, you know, was moody or because my view on it, Tom, was if I was, you know, if I had a training session where I'd been left out the game before, and I was moping about and I was just off it and not, you know, not doing what I was supposed to do. If I got back in the team the following week, I wouldn't feel good about myself. I wouldn't feel like I've earned that. Do you know what I mean? I feel like, I've threw my toys out the pram and I've been given a chance. I wouldn't never want that. And that's pretty much how I've been all through my career. And has it sort of cost me starting games at times? I'd probably say yes, definitely. There's managers that don't want the confrontation, don't want, you know, certain players who are going to come and have a right go at them if they're not playing. They'd rather just go for the safe option. And that's, you know, that's just their, how they will do it. But so I'd probably say, yeah, I think there has been, you know, plenty of occasions over my career where I've probably been left on the bench or left out because of my character and knowing that I'm not a, you know, person who's going to throw cups and throw my boots and stuff and bang down the manager's door.
I left out one England thing, of course. Is from memory, did you get sent off for kicking Cristiano Ronaldo?
So, you know what, Tom? So it was the it was a Toulon tournament. So I was actually, it was our first game in the tournament. We had Portugal, and obviously Cristiano was playing for them, and I think he was still at Sporting at the time, but there was a lot of hype around him going to Manchester United. So there was loads of media attention. And I remember it was just before halftime. I was actually captain as well. So I captained the team in a tournament. And listen, Tom, I mean, you know, it was nowhere near a red card challenge. I don't think I even connected. And to this day, I don't think it was on Cristiano. It's one of them. If you mentioned in a sentence with Cristiano, then you probably don't correct it. But
ruined his career.
Sent off. I don't think it was for a challenge on. Well, yeah, I mean, he's, you know, someone might say that I kickstarted it for him. Do you know what I mean? I think he was probably playing the tournament at that Toulon and got his move to Man U, and the rest is history, so to say. But yeah, that's one thing. Yeah, I don't think he's completely true on my wiki page.
Who were the mad characters at Blues that you played with? Who was the loony tune in the dressing room?
We had a few, Tom, as you well know. I mean, like I say, that squad was brilliant. It had full of characters. Like I say, Michael Johnson was probably the joker. Jono, I'll say, got huge amount of time for respect, and he was probably the joker. Danny Sonner. I remember my first training session with the first team. I come trotting over, and Danny Sonner's like, "Bloody hell, are we signing Rodney Trotter?" I was obviously tall, skinny, in big ears. Danny was a great guy. I mean, they were the banter and that in that dressing room. Jeff Horsfield, Tommy Mooney, you know, them characters. Obviously, Skip, Martin O'Connor, but Benno as well. Ian Bennett, probably one of the funniest guys. You know, his quick wit. Graham Hyde was another one who was, you know, Hyde had such a quick wit about him that, you know, had you howling. So, yeah, there was some characters. But, yeah, I'd say Danny Sonner was one of the maddest ones at that time. You know, people always ask me what Martin Granger was like. And Grange, like you say, his reputation on the pitch was obviously no nonsense and that. But he's such a great guy off it. You know, I can't. You know, he's probably one of them that Blues fans think he's hard as nails and he's this, he's that, but he's actually a great guy off the pitch, and was one of them I probably mentioned at the start that got his arm around me and looked after me. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, he had this hard man image with the Blues fans. But yeah, I've played with a fair few characters over my time, Tom. There's a lot.
Did you ever fall out with players, any players? Not at Blues necessarily, but was there any players you couldn't take to?
You know what, Tom? I think over my career, I'm not a person that I would say loses my temper easily or it falls out with people. You know, I think I'm very balanced in my view, and I can't honestly say there's anyone I've ever fell out with. I mean, there's people I've had words with, you know, purely I think on a football standpoint. But I don't think I've ever fell out with a teammate or you know, had crossed words where it's got personal or anything like that. That's just not my character. That's just never who I've been. And, you know, and that group that I started with, you know, made my career, you know, my debut with your Grangers, your Michael Johnsons. I learned early on that, yes, you have your disagreements on the football pitch. You have a go at each other. You know, you may even flip in, you know, have a ruckus in the changing room or whatever it is. But that's it. It's done and dusted then. As people, as human beings, it's no hard feelings. I just want the best for you. You should want the best for me. And that's how I think football should be. You know, yes, you know, it's an emotional game, isn't it? And yes, you're going to swear and sort of, you know, give each other a dig now and again. But that's it. That's where it stays. And when I say dig, I mean verbally. It might be the odd one round there, but... yeah, listen, you know, that's it. You just want the best for each other and you want to win games and be successful.
Where did this love for, this weird love affair with basketball
come? I'm so glad you brought this up, Tom. I never thought I'd hear you talk about basketball on this podcast.
I didn't say weird.
You know what, Tom? It started really sort of early 2000s and it coincided with me sort of, you know, making a professional debut, and I'd always loved basketball when I was at school and everything. And I just, you know, it was just I fell in love with the way just more at the athletes and the players, and basketball's always been a game that's fascinated me, that, you know, you can take 30 shots in a game, miss 29, but you hit the game winner and everything's forgot about. And, you know, I think I just love the way they approach games as well. The mindset. I mean, I think American sports have always been probably ahead of us in terms of their preparation, how they, you know, psychology side of the game. And that's probably the thing that drew me in, was the psychology. And you know, I drew a lot of inspiration and influence from watching how they prepared for games. And again, the team spirit, you know, there's only 15 guys in a roster for NBA, but they sew together, and the team spirit they try and the bond they try and create. That's what drew me in, I think, and still does, obviously. And I've had a love for the game. I've tried to get you involved in it, Tom, but
not a chance.
Don't think it's ever going to happen, but who knew, Tom, you was going to be a dog lover and have dogs at this stage of your life? And
good point.
I mean, so anything's possible, Tom. That's what I say.
No contact in basketball, that does it for me.
there's contact, but yeah, you can't get away with much.
Held out for a contact. Who's your favourite team, by the way, just before we finish?
In basketball? Oh, Miami Heat, yeah. So I've been out there a few times. And
oh, you've been to watch them?
Oh, I have, yeah, I have. So, been out there. I'm fully fledged Miami Heat fan. So, I'll try and get out there when I can now to go and watch them again in the near future.
So, finally, management is on your radar eventually. Management, coaching, but that staying in the game is definitely on your radar.
Oh, definitely, Tom. Definitely. I think there's... You know, as I say, I've had 21 years now where I've played professionally. You know, I've been transitioning this year into, obviously, from playing to coaching. And I've loved every minute of the coaching side of it. And again, just talking about all the experiences, everything, the knowledge I've learned over that time, you know, I want to give back. I enjoy giving advice to younger players now. And I know the game has changed and evolved and everything around the game now, social media and everything else. But I feel like I've come through all that, you know, and I can give back and also be successful while doing that. So that's where my mind's at now. And I've got to say, I do love the coaching side, love being out on the grass and helping players and helping develop players. That's definitely the near future for me, and see where that takes me.
Darren, it's been an absolute pleasure remembering some of those great things. Thanks for being a guest on the podcast. Thank you so much indeed. Folks, just to remind you to leave a review. Please leave a review, good or bad. We don't mind as long as it's honest. Thanks for being with us on the Games Gone podcast. Darren, thanks very much.
Cheers for having me, Tom.